Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about identity management with a new project, Open Unison. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps, episode 372, recorded January 26, 2016, Open Unison. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, the projects you may never heard of before but now want to go download right after the show, or projects you may be using every day and not aware of it. How could that be? But joining me today is my lovely and talented co-host, Simon Phipps. Simon, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Randall. It's tipping down with rain, dark as night here in Southampton in the UK. So I'm kind of jealous of you over there in Anaheim.
Well, yeah. You know, it's, I didn't mention this, but yes, I am in the amazing small town, big town of Anaheim, California. I am looking out right now at my balcony window. I'm up on the 13th floor, and I can see the Matterhorn, and I can see Space Mountain. So I'm that close to Disneyland, and I'm watching the fireworks every night, which is a lot of fun. And you said you're in a dark and stormy area?
It's kind of... But you know that storm they had over on the East Coast at the beginning of the week? That's just arrived here in the UK and is busy dumping gallons of rain all over the country.
Oh, ugly. It's actually getting up to a nice 70 Fahrenheit here. I said Fahrenheit because I know you may be thinking in other numbers. So we're busy working every day. Actually working with Captain Neil, working on Insight Cruises business every day this week. So I'm coming down here. We're basically camped out in a sort of a sequestered. That's not even a word. What's the word? Sequestered? Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I was saying clustered, but that's not the right word either. working on stuff for his website and all that sort of stuff. So it's been a lot of fun. Okay, so enough about us, enough about where we are located. It's not this week in weather. It's actually called Floss Weekly. So let's go ahead and first let's talk about the project we have today. We have Mark Borstein coming on to talk about openunison.io. And sort of reading directly from their webpage, it says it's Open Unison combines web access management and provisioning services into a single system and utilizing an internal virtual directory powered by My Virtual Directory. It's like My Little Pony, but it's a virtual directory. Open Unison can combine identity data from several sources, such as Active Directory, LDAP directories, and relational databases. I know this is a very important thing for enterprise level stuff, but other than that, I know nothing about identity management. Do you know anything about identity management, Simon?
Well, I do have to declare an interest because after I left Sun Microsystems, I helped start a company called ForgeRock that creates enterprise-scale open-source identity management, authorization, and authentication systems. So I do have enough knowledge about it to be dangerous, I have to admit.
Oh, good. I'm going to let you ask most of the questions then, because for me, this is all mysterious stuff. I have no idea what this stuff is all about. So I'm glad one of the two of us sort of accidentally actually knows about this. This is good. All right. Well, you know, we could sit here and chat all day about what we think this is about, but we're going to get it from the horse's mouth in just a few minutes. Not calling you a horse, Mark. Don't worry about that. But I do have an important announcement to make before we get into the show. So whether you're developing an app, a website, or working on a server-based project, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean offers Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed easily to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. And this helps you get your project off the ground quickly and makes it easy to scale when you find success. DigitalOcean is used by over 600,000 developers, including me. I found out about them almost exactly a year ago at previous year's scale, and I've been using one to basically build my packages for my FreeBSD box. You can deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or simple API. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. And again, one of the few hosting services that provides FreeBSD, so that's why I really like them. Select for one of the many pre-configured one-clicks like Drupal, Docker, or Node.js to get up and running quickly, or build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSDs in state-of-the-art data centers around the world. It's highly scalable to meet the demands of rapidly growing applications or businesses. You can also use advanced features like floating IPs for high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via API. Extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your droplet. You want to configure a LAMP server, set up a virtual desktop or VPN? They've got you covered. And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. And I've actually seen that happen, so they're telling the truth here. DigitalOcean is incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit for free. And we appreciate DigitalOcean sponsoring Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Mark Borstein. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And where are you speaking to us from?
From very snowy Alexandria, Virginia. So that storm that Simon was mentioning, that's dumping tons and tons of rain. Yeah, we just got tons and tons of snow.
Wow, awesome, awesome. I heard 4 feet, 5 feet. Something like that?
That might be a little bit of an exact. Well, I would say we probably got between 20 and 30 inches by the time all was said and done.
Wow. Wow. You know, the last time I had snow outside my front door, I just regretted it. I have a Z28. It doesn't work with snow. So I would I'd be stuck at home for quite a while. I used to have a 4Runner, and that was great in the snow. I used to go up to the mountain all the time and ski and snowboard. But those days are about 20 years behind me now. So I'm not quite 10 years behind me. I'm not quite that old. Anyway, so this isn't this week in the weather. You know, it really is about the project. The project today being OpenUnison. How well did we do? Can you give us a 30,000-foot view?
Sure. So, you know, like you said, you're right off my website. So that was actually all accurate. But the short version of where OpenUnison came from was I had spent myself and my business partner had spent, you know, now over a decade building and deploying identity management. Every vendor you can think of, CA, Oracle, Microsoft, ForgeRock, you name it, we had deployed it, multiple industries, commercial, federal government, and they all kind of had a lot of the same problems. And the biggest thing that we found was that these systems were more systems focused rather than applications focused. And ultimately what we found was that none of these identity systems really provided value without applications. And so we wanted to take that application focus to building an identity solution. The other thing that we found is that a lot of identity solutions try to be very prescriptive in how you do things. They try to both model everything that your business does and also provide you every single feature and piece of functionality that you might require. And so what you end up doing is spending more of your time working around the shortcomings of the system than building the code that will actually provide value to what you do. So we said, okay, well, let's take all the different functions that applications need. Applications need to know who you are, what you can do, and because we're talking about enterprises for the most part, the auditors need to be able to see why you have that access. And so we wanted to build that into a simple, easy-to-deploy solution. We provide a SSO solution, so we have a reverse proxy with, you know, a dozen or so authentication mechanisms, username, password, certificate, multi-factor over SMS, TOTP, you know, Google Authenticator, a few others. You know, we also added the different way to do the application integration. Since we're a reverse proxy, a lot of other solutions will do things like headers or have agents. And agents have just been a constant headache in every deployment we've been a part of. And so we went with what we call last mile, where we take for every request a little bit of JSON that has what you've been authorized for, who you are, whatever attributes are cared about, nonce and timestamp, and we encrypt the whole thing and send it down to the downstream application. Our component then decrypts it, validates it, and lets you through. The nice thing about this is that we don't actually have to call home to the agent, so there's no round-tripping back to a policy server. So it makes the implementation very, very fast and lets us encrypt everything. That's on the SSO side. Then on the provisioning side, and this is all in the same appliance or virtual appliance, we integrate a workflow-based solution. We purposely did not go with a standard approach like BPM or Bipple, basically because we found that most identity management workflows don't need the level of power and flexibility that those systems have. And those systems almost require that you're using an IDE. We want something that could be very easily edited by hand. So we created our own very simple XML-based workflow dialect that can be very easily edited in any text editor. And then finally, we wanted to make it a vergence between the two in a just-in-time provisioning solution. So what we actually preach from kind of an overall model is instead of the typical identity management solution where you go in, you request access, and then there's a workflow that provisions you to a downstream application, we actually go ahead and say provision into a central location, and then just as the user logs in, let our SSO solution synchronize the identity in real time. So that way you've got your central location being your authoritative source for authorization information, but still getting into the downstream application as the user needs it. So it provides a lot of flexibility.
Well, Mark, it's been great having you on the show. I guess we got to go now. No, just kidding. Thank you for the nice long answer. Behind the scenes, we really appreciate long answers because it means we have more time to think. But in this case, I was just counting the number of buzzwords I was hearing. So I only understood about a third of what you were saying. Thank God Simon's on this show. I'm sure you can ask a lot more technical questions. But I want to know how this got started. I know you were saying you were talking about various things that you had tried at various places that you were. What actually was the impetus for getting Open Unison started? And you might also talk about the relationship between Open Unison and Unison.
So we didn't start off as an open source company. We started off as a 100% closed source proprietary company a few years ago. And what we ended up with, I basically grew up in open source. I mean, I've been using Linux since I was 18 years old. I've had a couple of different open source projects over the years. And in fact, I got my first job through open source, which was kind of fun. So I've always drank that particular Kool-Aid. And when we first started the company, we weren't really sure, did we want to go that open source route or not? And as we kind of looked at the market, we kind of came to realize that folks who are going to use an open source solution, and this goes out to all the entrepreneurs out there who are thinking about this, we find that, at least in the enterprise world, folks who are going to use an open source solution might not care that it's open source, in that they'll pay for it if they want to pay for something. They won't pay for it if they don't want to pay for something. So we weren't losing any potential customers. But we gained the community of open source and additional opportunities, stuff like, being on Lost Weekly and a couple other similar situations. It opens a lot of doors to a startup, especially in the enterprise world, that being closed source and proprietary just doesn't help with. We decided to open source Open Unison back in June. And the main difference between the open source product and the commercial product is that the commercial product has a built-in virtual appliance around it. So we've got an integrated web server, we've got integrated management features, clustering systems. The UI is there, it lets you have pick lists for everything so you don't have to remember what was the name of that certificate. So it makes the deployments a lot simpler and a lot faster because there's a lot less fat fingering. And then you get high availability with clustering. OpenUnison has all of the same functional bits. So all the stuff I talked about at the beginning are, you know, all the different authentication methods, the workflow, the provisioning targets, etc., is all open source. The only difference is that you have to hand configure it in XML. So we've got a fully documented XML schema. The documentation actually has examples of XML for every one of our supported configurations. So what I'll actually typically do when I'm putting together a demo or something is I'll just copy and paste it right out of the documentation and just go with it, customize it from there. We have Docker images for everything now, both the open source and commercial versions. And then the third part of the kind of triangle there is Scale, which is our web interface. So that's a J2EE application that leverages the web services that Unison and OpenUnison provides. You can use any front end that you want to. We publish and document all of our web services endpoints, but we provide Scale as kind of that starting point if you want to use it.
So how long ago did you start this company, Mark?
So we were founded in 2010.
Right. And so is all the code that you wrote for Unison, that's all new build, or were you inheriting code from somewhere else, or were you assembling existing open source components? What was the origin of it all?
So the only, you know, obviously it's made of a lot of different open source pieces, right? I mean, we didn't, you know, write our own web server. But from a foundational standpoint, the only thing that we started from really was My Virtual Directory, which is a LDAP virtual directory open source that has been kind of my pet project for years, probably since about 2006. But other than that, we started from an empty IDE. Actually, the original idea for both the product and the company was to build a universal reverse proxy that used Kerberos to integrate with applications. Never really got that working right, which is where Last Mile came in. Although ironically, we actually do now have the Kerberos extensions in place to be able to do, that original idea of Kerberos into everything, or at least anything that supports it. So that was really the origins of it. And then we started off with the SSO side, building the reverse proxy. Then we built out the provisioning engine. Our first version of Scale, which never really saw the light of day except for one customer, was actually written in .NET. And then after kind of going through that, we said, okay, let's stick with Java. We came out with Scale probably about, I mean, it's been in GitHub for a while now. But, you know, we did our first release probably a couple months ago. With our first production deployment of it. And then we're also writing a AngularJS-based version of Scale that's fully single-page application to make it even easier for situations where you don't necessarily want to have that back-end web service.
Right. So what sort of applications would you say this is well-suited to? You know, it sounds to me as if this is a drop-in SSO for a cloud application. And that if I was doing large-scale, multiple enterprise applications, I probably ought to apply elsewhere. But is that a correct guess, or would you say this is an enterprise authentication and authorization system?
I would certainly say it's an enterprise system. The way that we're designed is we try to stick with the open source one tool, one job methodology of doing things. And so we provide a lot of different tools in the kit, but you don't have to use all of them. And because we're so small and lightweight, it makes it very easy to deploy it alongside things. So as an example, if you don't have anything in place, we can certainly provide you with an SSO solution. If you already have an identity provider in place, we can actually make the integration much easier often than what a lot of agent-based solutions are going to provide. And then on the enterprise side, again, if you want to deploy it on its own, it can certainly handle the enterprise system. You can define any number of workflows that you like. You can define different permissions on them. Scale provides reporting capabilities. So what you use it for really depends on what you need it for. It can be used both as a standalone enterprise system and to augment existing systems.
Right. So I could use this as a kind of a front end for my exceptionally complex Active Directory system, or my unbelievably expensive Oracle system, or my somewhat Byzantine ForgeRock system, as a way of giving a simplified identity management interface for some particular apps. Is that true?
That would absolutely be a great use case. And in fact, we've done that a couple of times, especially at the virtual directory layer. That's something that I think really sets OpenUnison apart from other identity management solutions, is having that integrated virtual directory, because now we can abstract away all of those different use cases you just mentioned. You name it, we've run into it where, you know, folks say, well, we don't know LDAP, so, you know, everything has to be in a database rather. Okay, we can do that. We need to keep everything in Active Directory, including passwords. We just did a proof of concept not too long back using the free IPA system, which is kind of Red Hat's equivalent of Active Directory for Linux, where we were able to deploy Linux servers up on AWS, set up an SSO solution between Active Directory Federation services and free IPA with the just-in-time provisioning mechanism in there. And allow users, admins, to be able to request access to get into servers through IPA using the scale interface, but also be able to SSO in to be able to provision their SSH key. So because we can, Swiss Army knife of identity management so many different ways, I've yet to run into a use case that we either can't handle out of the box or can't add some functionality very easily to handle.
Right. So is that all out of the OpenUnison box? Or, to get those connectors for some upstream identity management system, do I have to buy your proprietary version?
Nope. We do everything in open source. So if you check out our GitHub, Tremolo Security GitHub, you'll see that there are several additional connectors that we haven't yet integrated into the main branch, but they're all being developed right there on GitHub. Where we see the value of our proprietary side is not in trying to hold anything back from a downstream connector standpoint, but more the time to implement using the commercial system, obviously support, and then also our integrated unit test system. We have a very extensive certification system here at Tremolo Security. We don't put it on the wiki as supported unless we've got automated tests that go with it. We keep that as proprietary, partially as a value add, partially as it's kind of coded to our solution, our network, so might not be a lot of help to be externally open sourced.
But doesn't that inhibit the ability of outside developers to get involved in co-developing with you?
I don't know yet. We actually haven't had anybody try and jump in. We obviously want to make that easier. So our plan at the moment is, if there are contributions, we'll own the creation of the unit tests. Or obviously, if there are unit tests that get created from the community, we would continue to keep those in the community.
Right. So do you have any outside developers at all collaborating? I looked on GitHub, and it didn't look like the most active project that I've seen on GitHub, to be frank with you.
Yeah, I mean, we're really just launching now, so we don't have any outside developers. Obviously, as being open source, one of the big reasons we want to start to build that community.
So I see you've picked the Apache license. Is that correct?
Yes.
So what was your rationale for that? And will you be using a copyright assignment so that you get to own the copyright to the aggregate work?
So we went with Apache because we wanted to go with a pretty liberal license. GPL tends to scare a lot of enterprises, which is our main customer, whether that's deserved or not. So, and we weren't really worried about people stealing the code or other businesses want to integrate this and then not you know, not involve us moving forward. Identity management, I think, is kind of unique in the enterprise world in that it requires a very specialized set of skills that people just don't go to school for. I mean, you go to school to be a hacker or be a software developer. No one really goes to school saying, I want a degree in identity management. And much of the value of both OpenUnison and Unison Scale, all three of those anyway, are in the experiences that built it. And so I don't really see someone like a application developer or something that wanted to just embed this functionality and say, this is now our identity management solution because Apache 2.0, they can do that, because I don't think it'd be very successful, because it wouldn't take long for them to fall behind the needs of their customers.
Right. So how have you been doing it as a business? I mean, we actually started ForgeRock in 2010 as well. So how are you getting on? You're clearly not at the scale of ForgeRock at the moment, but is it going well?
We're small but mighty. We're a small self-funded startup, which in the enterprise world is an interesting experience, to say the least. We do have one enterprise customer right now. We are the main component of a large multi-jurisdictional identity provider, or identity as a service, really, here in the DC metro area. So we've been able to show a lot of different facets of what commercial Unison can do, and we've been steadily expanding that out. A couple of the different use cases that you described before, we provide the identity management from a central location. So users log in, request access, it gets approved, et cetera. But since it goes across clouds, we actually have Unison instances deployed on those clouds to provide the SSO and just-in-time provisioning. So it provides a seamless experience for the users.
Hey, you know, so I've been again counting all the buzzwords, and this stuff still sort of mystifies me. Without as many buzzwords, can you tell me what problem it's solving? I mean, why would I reach for this? You said SSO a few times. I don't know if everybody knows. I mean, single sign-on, I hope, because otherwise I don't even know what it means. So a single sign-on means I'm logged in and I can use all the services possibly across many websites without having to log back into each site. Does that make sense? Is that what it is?
Sort of. Let's bring it back down to an application level, which is probably what most people are going to understand. So let's say you have you're deploying a WordPress site, right? Well, WordPress, you know, you got different roles and you got users and you got tables and, you know, you got a bunch of plugins that can make the management of that easier, right? So, and we're talking mainly enterprise here. So in that context, you know, maybe you've got a few dozen users. The initial load might be a little painful, but, you know, there's a plugin where you can log in using your Active Directory credentials or desktop single sign-on. So, again, you know, you don't have to put in your password after you log into your workstation. So, you know, you might not say, well, I don't need an external identity management solution at that point. But that WordPress site then runs on a Linux server, and it talks to a MySQL server. So how are you controlling who logs into that Linux server? Well, you know, let's say you're using a directory. I mean, you could hook up Linux directly to Active Directory, but your AD folks probably don't know their way around Linux real well. And so not that they're not willing to help you, they just might not know how, or, you know, their bosses have different priorities. So how are you going to manage the users on that? Now, you probably have even fewer users there, maybe handful of system administrators. But then you've got MySQL, and MySQL has users that you use to log into MySQL and different permissions per database. So even if you're using just a standard, you know, just a single database to power WordPress, you still have a security aspect to that. And now let's put this whole thing up on Amazon, you know, for sake of argument. Well, now you've got to be able to log into the Amazon console to be able to work with these different servers that you've set up. And the Amazon console provides a single sign-on. You know, you can hook it up with, you know, your Active Directory Federation services or whatnot. And, you know, it would work. But, you know, then there's the other side of identity management, which is the reporting aspect. If when the auditors come to call and they say, well, you know, how do you know who has access to this? Well, when you get to an implementation standpoint, when you send the role information to Amazon that says, well, you only have access to these six servers or whatever, that has to be in a very specialized form. So doing that can often make it difficult to report on. Same thing with WordPress. WordPress keeps things in a specialized form. Linux keeps things in a specialized form. So all these different applications manage identity on their own. So if you're looking to manage one system's application, OpenUnison could certainly make life easier, but I could understand why it might not be the first thing you go with. But once you start layering in multiple systems, especially in an enterprise, you start to run into a few issues. One, it's the integration process. How many times are you going to integrate the identity solution? Two, the organizational process. If your organization just isn't built for crossing those lines, you know, you're the person who's spending money on you, you know, on the consultants and the contractors are looking to implement a business goal. They're not necessarily looking to build that identity management solution. And so something like OpenUnison that's very quick to deploy will help work within that budget. And then finally, when the auditors come to call, being able to provide a report that says, yeah, Mark has the, you know, these six resources and they were approved by Randall and this one was approved by Simon and this one was rejected for these reasons. It really adds a lot of value, especially when you're trying to look at who has access to what from what systems are being utilized standpoint. It helps give you a really good window into what your enterprise is doing. And because it's so lightweight, you know, you can start off very simply and build out from there. Does that kind of help demystify things a bit?
That helps quite a bit. Thank you. Actually, I understand a lot more about it than that just increased my level of knowledge about tenfold. So good. I'm glad I had you on today. Let me think about it this way, as from a programmer's perspective. What is the interface to this from the users of it? Like the say I'm writing a web app. How do I start talking to this to get my authentication brought in?
So you've got a few different options. If you want to use OpenUnison for authentication, you can either use it as what's called an identity provider. So we're a standalone web application, and when somebody hits your app, you say, well, I don't know who you are. I'm going to send you over to OpenUnison. And OpenUnison will authenticate the user however you configure it and then send some kind of, whether it's OAuth2, OpenID Connect, SAML, for some reason you really want to write your own. But it all goes through the user's browser and through web services. So there's no direct interaction, so to say, or it's beside, if you think about it. You know, your application goes here, OpenUnison goes here. So they're peers to each other. So that's option one. Option two is to use OpenUnison as a reverse proxy. So OpenUnison would sit between your user or your application, my hand signals here, and your user. And so what would happen is all traffic would go through OpenUnison and then integrate with your application via the last mile process I described earlier. So if you're Apache application, then there's a Apache authentication module that you can integrate. If it's Java, we've got integration with, you know, servlets, JBoss, EAP, Tomcat, etc. If you're talking WebLogic, if you're talking .NET, we have a .NET module, and then we actually just finished a prototype of the Kerberos module. So if you're running an application on IIS that knows about Kerberos and Active Directory, you don't have to install anything. And so then we transfer the identity information to you in the form of what we call a secure header. So because we sit between your application and your user, we can inject headers as the user authenticates with things like the user ID, maybe some authorization information, whatever is important to you, put it in the header, or however the application knows how to integrate. So, for instance, in Java world, if you're talking about a standards compliant app, you know, you might be pulling it out of the request object. In .NET world, you're looking at the Windows Identity Framework, so the group providers framework. So we implement that. And so the nice thing about that So it lets you as a programmer write the code without actually worrying about how you're going to authenticate.
Okay, so again, I'm but a mere programmer, so I'm a sysadmin too, and I actually have 12 hats I wear. But so I'm thinking, when you're talking about that first solution, is this similar then to, say, using a Google ID in my app, where I hand off to Google, they get the password, and they hand me back some sort of secure information that says, yes, this really was Randall logging in?
Exactly.
Ah, okay. So now I'm understanding it better. That's good. And actually, we did have a question from the chat room. We have a wonderful chat room available every day that we tape. Gray580, who's been a frequent chat room visitor, says, does OpenUnison also handle third-party logins like Facebook, Google, and Twitter authentication logins?
Absolutely. So we actually recently just published, maybe in the last month or so, a couple of different projects on GitHub, on the Tremo Security GitHub site, I guess it's called, where we have Google authentication using OpenID Connect, LinkedIn, Twitter, and then we actually already had Facebook integrated. We didn't really do a lot of documentation work on that. And then what we also provide is this idea of a login service. And so what we actually let you do is have one point that the user goes to, chooses how they want to authenticate. So it could be using social, it could be using username, password, it could be picking you know, who their identity provider is. We actually don't make a distinction between them. And so you can actually mix and match social login, username, password, federated login, stuff like that.
And Gray580 also asks, does OpenUnison support custom roles for websites?
Absolutely. We do not dictate what even the word role means, whether it's attribute-based, LDAP groups. I'm personally kind of towards LDAP groups for the most part. I find them pretty easy to use. But we don't prescribe any of that. You do it however you need to.
Wow, pretty cool. And also, I'm sort of curious, was company Tremello Security founded around Unison originally?
Yeah, Unison was the original name of the product. Well, it wasn't the original name of the product, but Unison as a product was really where Tremello Security started.
And why the name Tremello?
So, I like to think I'm a marketing maven, apparently I'm quite bad at it. And my original co-founder, who actually is quite good at marketing, and I were trying to figure out what to call the company. And so the original name of the company was actually going to be Auto IDM. And the when we first got things kind of up and running, and I showed my partner, you know, kind of how to work, you know, he started twiddling around with it, and he said, "Well, what is it?" I said, "Well, it's a web access manager." And his mind, he said, "Wham, whammy bar, tremolo," which is the sound fluctuation made when, you know, they hit the whammy bar on guitar. And I was like, "Tremolo Security? Nobody's going to know what that is. No, I don't like that." And then I spent about 4 hours that night trying to find a domain name with IDM in it. And finally, I did a whoisTremoloSecurity.com, and it came up open. It's like, okay, cool. That's the name of the company.
Yes, that sounds like something out of a Dilbert cartoon. So where are you going now then, Mark? You know, what's your journey here? It sounds like you've really only just started putting a toe in the open source water, so to speak. Do you want to get a collaborative community going, or do you want to follow the path of this being a market maker or a loss leader for your proprietary product?
No, I mean, we're, like I said, I drink the Kool-Aid on open source. So we're absolutely looking to build a community of both users and hopefully contributors. You know, that's why we don't keep any of the connectors proprietary. with the only exception being that if I don't have the right to give out the source. So, for instance, I had done a connector for a very popular multi-factor solution that I didn't own the source to, so I can't turn around and open source it. But other than that, we are very committed to making sure that all the new code that we put out there, as long as it pertains directly to the functional pieces rather than the appliance piece, of being open source.
Right. And of course, you'll need to make those unit tests for the new code available in the open while you're working on it.
Well, you know, we're willing to be flexible on that. You know, I think this is also a bit of a learning experience for us, you know, given that we haven't had a lot of community involvement so far. You know, people have seen it and we've talked to folks about it.
Right.
But, you know, if the community comes back and says, you know, we think it's really important and this will change whether or not we use it, then, you know, we're absolutely willing to be flexible and see if there's a way that we can do that that both does what we need. Because, I mean, let's be honest, nobody wants a unit test that, you know, talks, you know, hard code for my IP in my server room or my host name. So, you know,
maybe
want to make sure that we're flexible.
We'll have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So, what do you think the journey towards community is going to look like for you? I mean, were you down at scale showing people this as well?
So we kind of first started off, our first big conference was, we had a booth at Red Hat Summit last year, and we were able to start getting a little buzz. And then we went out to AWS's reInvent, and we did a couple of small conferences as well. And everybody seemed interested. You know, I think one of the hardest parts is just kind of that marketing piece. And so, you know, we're doing a big push right now, you know, asked to be, you know, on this show, which, you know, we're really happy to be on and really thankful for. We're also going to be doing a meetup here in the Northern Virginia area, couple weeks, the Northern Virginia Open Source Cloud. And then we're going to be doing a webinar on OpenShift with the OpenShift Commons at the end of the month. So we're trying to do a big push. We're looking at a couple of different ways to kind of get the system in front of people. And so if there are any application owners out there that are really interested in, you know, folks that have, open source applications or systems that want to, you know, maybe team up and see if we can't build a couple of prototypes, and whatnot, you know, come one, come all.
Right. I mean, it's a very difficult market space to penetrate. I can tell you from experience. You know, there's big budget activities like Gartner's IAM conference that you have to work out how you can afford to go to. So, it sounds like you're following the good routes there. So, do you think that you're going to be focused more on that Red Hat community rather than trying to be a generalist?
You know, initially we're looking at the open source community, the enterprise open source community. And so that's kind of why we picked Red Hat as kind of that starting point. They've got some identity management, but it's kind of tough to walk into, you know, a company, you know, try to cozy up to the customers of a company that sells large identity management solutions and say, no, don't buy that, buy us. And so they've got some solutions, but they don't have quite that large, all-encompassing, you know, there's no Red Hat identity manager out there the same way there might be a CA or Oracle identity manager. So that's kind of why we're starting there. You know, we're small, so we've got to pick our spots.
And I did ask, I probably missed you answering the question earlier. If I were to make a contribution here and make a pull request, would you want me to assign copyright to you, or are you happy simply to allow all of your community contributors to retain their copyright?
Right now we're saying that you've got to assign the copyright. Again, we're willing to be flexible. You know, we're not trying to dump code onto the community as a gimmick, you know, which has been known to happen, unfortunately. And so this is going to be a learning process. And if we get folks that are like, look, this is a great system, I want to use it, I want to contribute to it, but for XYZ reason, I can't contribute based on the assignment. then, you know, we'll get creative. I'm a big fan of creative solutions. You know, one of the big reasons why we think, at least right now, we have to have that assignment is, you know, as we try and sell the commercial version, because the commercial version is built completely on top of OpenUnison, we need to be able to certify every piece of code that's in there. So we need to be very careful about what code goes in. And at least right now, the easiest way to do that is say, yep, we own it. We're taking responsibility for it.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll be interested to hear how you get on with that as a community building model, because I'd say my experience has been that communities tend to be allergic to contributor agreements. So what's the roadmap for the OpenUnison project now? What new things are you going to be adding over 2016?
So right now we're going to – so we just did our first we released the gold version. I haven't put out a press release or anything of OpenUnison. We've got the Docker images in place. So if you go up to Docker Hub, you'll see that there's both OpenUnison and Scale Docker images ready to go. From here, we're probably going to be focused on getting a little bit done with OpenShift to show off that capability, especially for the webinar that's coming up. And then we're going to tighten up our free IPA integration. We think there's a lot of potential value there, especially when we talk to a lot of sysadmins in the cloud space. The idea of using things like data bags for moving SSH keys is just becoming untenable. So we think there's a lot of value there. And then just continuing to expand on different connectors, different authentication mechanisms, and different application integrations.
Well, we're almost out of time, but is there anything that we didn't ask you that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
No, this has been a great discussion. I really appreciate it.
Very good. And I have two final questions that I have to ask. Otherwise, I actually get real emails saying, please, you should have asked those questions. What's your favorite scripting language?
I'm a Python guy. I started off my career in Visual Basic, and just the clean syntax of it, I love it.
Great, great. Okay, and what's your favorite text editor?
I use Eclipse for all of my Java development. I've really fallen in love with Atom over the last couple of months.
Adam's been getting some traction. I'm actually trying to get them, the developers, on this show. So I bumped into them, I think, last year at OSCON. So definitely going to be bringing them in. And we've been mentioning them. I've mentioned them now recently when I've been talking about Dart, the programming language, because there's a Dart plugin for Adam. Seems there's a plugin for every language for Adam. I'm really hoping we can get them on. So I want to thank you for taking your time, Mark, to come on and talk about OpenUnison. And hopefully I wish your company great success in this.
Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Great. That was Mark Borstein talking to us about OpenUnison. I dare open this, but Simon, what do you think?
he's got some cool code there, and I wish him every success with it. I think that it's going to be really tough getting into the market space he's aiming for. It sounds like it would be a great addition to somebody else's stack, maybe Red Hat stack or something like that. But I think that it looks like a tool that needs to be consumed in an enterprise IDM environment while being from a company that an enterprise is going to struggle to do business with. And without a community to lend it momentum, the other reason to go for it is kind of missing. So I think he's got a tough challenge ahead establishing it. But it does look like, you know, he's got a great set of cluefulness about how to put together an integrated identity management system. And, he deserves every success with doing it. If I had to guess, I would say that a community-centric approach is going to work better at getting that network effect. But, you know, when you're a small business owner, you can't always afford to take the risk of going for a community-centric approach. What do you think, yep, Randall? You sounded as if it was outside your comfort zone.
Well, I agree with the community section. I mean, until this project gets a committee that's outside and not just completely owned by Tremello, that it can actually decide the roadmap and can actually get contributors, I'm afraid he's sort of open source and name only. I mean, until you make that next step where you've got a committee, an outside foundation or something that's really owning the code and owning the direction. I mean, he can build his project, his proprietary project, on top of that. But to be both the sole contributors and the sole owners of the roadmap, the company really owns the project at this point. Yeah, and right. I think he's got to learn that that's not a successful model. But is that something you were saying?
Well, you know, I'm less worried about that, really, because he really is early on in the journey here. I think the real question is how he's going to get enough people to form a community that could then play that role. I think that the next part of the journey is how do you get to community from here? And I think that's going to be his big problem. But I wish him every success with it. And he sounds like he's heading in going to good places with it, going to the sorts of places where open source minded enterprise software developers are going to be hanging out. That OpenShift community is really gaining momentum. So, you know, I think he's got a good chance. I wouldn't say it's open source in name only. The OpenUnison stuff looks like it's a complete solution. It's under an Apache license. Somebody could pick it up and fork it if they wanted to. Hopefully no one will need to because it will all be a wonderful place to be. So, you know, I'm hoping he's going to get on really well with taking his next steps to community. And I wish him every success with doing that.
Okay, Simon, great. Thanks. We're just about out of time, so I want to go ahead and talk about what's coming up. We have, first, next week, we have Apache LiveCloud, which is a uniform interface for the various clouds. We have OpenStack Astara, which is OpenStack Multi-Launch Manager, so it manages a fleet of OpenStack things, which is going to be pretty cool. We've talked about OpenStack a lot on the show, back mostly last year, I think so. Just added to the schedule, we had the Ledger program about 3 or 4 years ago, which is a sort of an accounting system for doing double entry booking, double entry booking, I guess, accounting, okay? But we have coming up in 2 weeks, we have H-Ledger, which is Ledger rewritten in Haskell. So my first question is going to be, why? but maybe they'll be able to answer that. Like, why Haskell in the first place, and why rewrite something that's perfectly good? So that'll be fun to bring somebody on for that. OpenAV Productions, which is a music performance synthesizer and maybe, you know, a MIDI player, that sort of thing. And just added to this, because I just saw these guys, it must have been only like 2 weeks ago, no, not 2 weeks ago, last weekend at Scale. ToroDB, really innovative thing. I mean, you've obviously heard of MongoDB, like especially that web scale presentation that's really laughable with a little cat or whatever, and talking stories. But MongoDB is all the rage about being a good NoSQL solution. Well, these guys, working with the ToroDB project, have managed to create a wire protocol MongoDB front end that translates all those requests into Postgres as a back end. And you'd think, oh, that's got to be slow. That's got to be, you know, non-compliant. All that stuff. No, they've actually got it to be 95% compliant, and they're only at release 0.4. And here's the kicker. On the same hardware, this MongoDB translator, this MongoDB adapter, talking to Postgres, runs about 5 times faster. So you get a lot more performance by doing this weird thing. And that's because Postgres is a lot older and has had a lot more performance things put into it. So, and it still scales. You can scale it either in the MongoDB tradition of going horizontal with MongoDB's protocol that way. Versus you can also scale at the Postgres level where you can actually have traditional replication and downward scaling and cross scaling with the multi-master replication stuff. But no, this is amazing. This is going to be amazing. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to that show. So he's going to come on in about 5 weeks. And I saw a lot of other people at Scale, so we'll see how that goes all the way across the board. So you can find out about all these projects and more and who's on our upcoming list by going to the homepage for this show. That's twit.tv/floss. If there's there's a big Google spreadsheet linked from there, and that's where all these names are coming from, where I read them from them every week. If there's a project that you want on this show and it's not on that list, please email the project leader or the coordinator or whoever sort of speaks for the project and have them email me, merlin@stoneinge.com. My address is there on the homepage for the Floss Weekly. I'm still filling a few more slots on Q1. I've got 3 or 4 more emails out to try to get those slots filled. There's a live live stream. We actually took a question from our live audience. We tape this show at 9:30 a.m. on Pacific time on Tuesdays, and that's at live.twitch.tv that you can actually watch the show, except for today, apparently some technical difficulties. Sorry about that. But at least we still had the chat room. That was great. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus and also at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus, and that's automatically retweeted to Merlin on Twitter. What's coming up for you, Simon?
Thanks, Randall. Well, life's coming up to be fairly quiet for me. I'm off to FOSDEM in Brussels this coming weekend. That's the Free and Open Source Developers European meeting. There'll be maybe 7,000-8,000 free and open source software developers gathering at the Free University of Brussels on January 30th and 31st. If you are at all able to get to Brussels for this coming weekend, then I strongly recommend you come along. You'll be able to see Richard Stallman, who I believe is giving one of the keynotes there. There are community meetings. There are a sequence of plenary sessions. I will be there the whole weekend. If you'd like to meet with me, then visit my webpage at webmink.com and fill out the contact form, and I will get in touch with you. I would love to meet and have a warm beverage with you in the icy waste that is probably Brussels this coming weekend. After that, I've got a pretty light schedule for public meetings. But hopefully you'll be able to find me on Twitter, where I'm Webmink, and you'll be able to find me on Google Plus, where I'm Simon Phipps. And I'm hoping to pick up the writing in InfoWorld in the near future, covering open source and the future desktop. That's about all from me, and so back to you, Randall.
Yeah. Okay. Hi. Yeah. Thank you. So I really have nothing to plug right now. I went to Scale. People saw me there. That was great. But I'm not going to be anywhere public for at least another few months. I'll be, of course, at OSCON. I'll be at probably also going to be at YAPSE. It's going to be in Orlando this year. I think that's slightly ahead of OSCON, but I really don't have anything to plug. So thank you, Simon, once again for joining us and giving your very expert questions that I would never have come up with because I don't know anything about this area. So thank you for your expertise.
I don't really know anything about it, but you know even less, so you can't tell.
That's the way to put it. All right. Well, and thanks again for our audience who makes the show. Otherwise, we'd be talking to nobody. We'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.